Chapter 50. Will remain here then, and do exactly as you like. No one will interfere with you, Florence, or wish to interfere with you, I'm sure. Florence shook her head in sad assent. I had no sooner begun to advise your poor papa that he really ought to seek some distraction and restoration in a temporary change, apostrophe said Mrs. Chick, than he told me he had already formed the intention of going into the country for a short time. I'm sure I hope he'll go very soon. He can't go too soon. But I suppose there are some arrangements connected with his private papers and so forth. Consequent on the affliction that has tried us all, so much I can't think what's become of mine. Lucretia, lend me yours, my dear, that may occupy him for one or two evenings in his own room. Your papa's a dummy, child, if ever there was one, apostrophe said Mrs. Chick, drying both her eyes at once with great care on opposite corners of Miss Tox's handkerchief. He'll make an effort. There's no fear of him. Apostrophe, is there nothing, aunt, apostrophe said Florence, trembling, I might do too, Lord, my dear child, apostrophe interposed Mrs. Chick, hastily, what are you talking about? If your papa said to me, I have given you his exact words, Louia, I want nothing, I am better by myself, what do you think he'd say to you? You mustn't show yourself to him, child. Don't dream of such a thing. Apostrophe, aunt, apostrophe said Florence, I will go, and lie down on my bed. Apostrophe, Mrs. Chick approved of this resolution, and dismissed her with a kiss. But Miss Tox, on a faint pretense of looking for the mislaid handkerchief, went upstairs after her, and tried in a few stolen minutes to comfort her, in spite of great discouragement from Susan Nipper. For Miss Nipper, in her burning zeal, disparaged Miss Tox as a crocodile, yet her sympathy seemed genuine, and had at least the vantage ground of disinterestedness. There was little favor to be won by it. And was there no one nearer and dearer than Susan, to uphold the striving heart in its anguish? Was there no other neck to clasp, no other face to turn to, no one else to say a soothing word to such deep sorrow? Was Florence so alone in the bleak world that nothing else remained to her? Nothing. Stricken motherless and brotherless at once, for in the loss of little Paul, that first and greatest loss fell heavily upon her, this was the only help she had. Oh, who can tell how much she needed help at first? At first, when the house subsided into its accustomed course, and they had all gone away, except the servants, and her father shut up in his own rooms, Florence could do nothing but weep, and wander up and down, and sometimes, in a sudden pang of desolate remembrance, fly to her own chamber, wring her hands, lay her face down on her bed, and know no consolation. Nothing but the bitterness and cruelty of grief. This commonly ensued upon the recognition of some spot or object very tenderly dated with him, and it made the alehouse, at first, a place of agony. But it is not in the nature of pure love to burn so fiercely and unkindly long. The flame that in its grosser composition has the taint of earth may prey upon the breast that gives it shelter, but the fire from heaven is as gentle in the heart as when it rested on the heads of the assembled 12, and showed each man his brother, brightened and unhurt. The image conjured up, there soon returned the placid face, the softened voice, the loving looks, the quiet trustfulness and peace. And Florence, though she wept still, wept more tranquilly, and courted the remembrance. It was not very long before the golden water, dancing on the wall, in the old place, at the old serene time, had her calm eye fixed upon it as it ebbed away. It was not very long before that room again knew her, often, sitting there alone, as patient and as mild as when she had watched beside the little bed. When any sharp sense of its being empty smote upon her, she could kneel beside it, and pray God it was the pouring out of her full heart, to let one angel love her and remember her. It was not very long before, in the midst of the dismal house so white and dreary, her low voice in the twilight, slowly and stopping sometimes, touched the old air to which he had so often listened, with his drooping head upon her arm. And after that, and when it was quite dark, a little strain of music trembled in the room, so softly played and sung, that it was more like the mournful recollection of what she had done at his request on that last night than the reality repeated. But it was repeated, often, very often, in the shadowy solitude, and broken murmurs of the strain still trembled on the keys when the sweet voice was hushed in tears. Thus she gained heart to look upon the work with which her fingers had been busy by his side on the seashore, and thus it was not very long before she took to it again with something of a human love for it, as if it had been sentient and had known him, and, sitting in the window, near her mother's picture, in the unused room so long deserted, wore away the thoughtful hours. Why did the dark eyes turn so often from this work to where the rosy children lived? They were not immediate. Why suggestive of her loss? For they were all girls. Four little sisters. But they were motherless like her, and had a father. It was easy to know when he had gone out, and was expected home, for the elder child was always dressed, and waiting for him at the drawing-room window, or in the balcony, and when he appeared, her expectant face lighted up with joy, while the others at the high window, and always on the watch too, clapped their hands, and drummed them on the sill, and called to him. The elder child would come down to the hall, and put her hand in his, and lead him up the stairs, and Florence would see her afterwards sitting by his side, or on his knee, or hanging coaxingly about his neck and talking to him. And though they were always gay together, he would often watch her face, as if he thought her like her mother that was dead. Florence would sometimes look no more at this, and bursting into tears would hide behind the curtain, as if she were frightened, or would hurry from the window. Yet she could not help returning, and her work would soon fall unheeded from her hands again. It was the house that had been empty years ago. It had remained so for a long time. At last, and while she had been away from home, this family had taken it, and it was repaired and newly painted, and there were birds and flowers about it, and it looked very different from its old self. But she never thought of the house. The children and their father were all in all. When he had dined, she could see them, through the open windows, go down with their governess or nurse, and cluster round the table, and in the still summer weather, the sound of their childish voices and clear laughter would come ringing across the street into the drooping air of the room in which he sat. Then they would climb and clamber upstairs with him, and romp about him on the sofa, or group themselves at his knee, a very nosegay of little faces, while he seemed to tell them some story. Or they would come running out into the balcony, and then Florence would hide herself quickly, lest it should check them in their joy, to see her in her black dress, sitting there alone. The elder child remained with her father, when the rest had gone away, and made his tea for him, happy little housekeeper she was then, and sat conversing with him, sometimes at the window, sometimes in the room, until the candles came. He made her his companion, though she was some years younger than Florence, and she could be as staid and pleasantly demure, with her little book or work box, as a woman. When they had candles, Florence from her own dark room was not afraid to look again. But when the time came for the child to say good night, Papa, apostrophe and go to bed, Florence would sob and tremble as she raised her face to him, and could look no more. Though still she would turn, again and again, before going to bed herself from the simple air that had lulled him to rest so often, long ago, and from the other low soft broken strain of music, back to that house. But that she ever thought of it, or watched it, was a secret which she kept within her own young breast. And did that breast of Florence, so ingenuous and true, so worthy of the love that he had borne her, and had whispered in his last faint words whose guileless heart was mirrored in the beauty of her face, and breathed in every accent of her gentle voice, did that young breast hold any other secret? Yes. One more. When no one in the house was stirring, and the lights were all extinguished, she would softly leave her own room, and with noiseless feet descend the staircase, and approach her father's door. against it, scarcely breathing, she would rest her face and head, and press her lips, in the yearning of her love. She crouched upon the cold stone floor outside it, every night, to listen even for his breath, and in her one absorbing wish to be allowed to show him some affection, to be a consolation to him, to win him over to the endurance of some tenderness from her, his solitary child, she would have knelt down at his feet, if she had dared, in humble supplication. No one knew it, no one thought of it. The door was ever closed, and he shut up within. He went out once or twice, and it was said in the house, that he was very soon going on his country journey, but he lived in those rooms, and lived alone, and never saw her, or inquired for her. Perhaps he did not even know that she was in the house. One day, about a week after the funeral, Florence was sitting at her work, when Susan appeared, with a face half laughing and half crying, to announce a visitor. A visitor. To me, Susan. Apostrophe said Florence, looking up in astonishment. Well, it is a wonder, ain't it now, Miss Floyd? Apostrophe apostrophe said Susan. But I wish you had a many visitors, I do, indeed, for you'd be all the better for it, and it's my opinion, that the sooner you and me goes even to the Moltke Leases, miss, the better for both. I may not wish to live in crowds, Miss Floyd, but still I'm not a oyster. Apostrophe, to do Miss Nipper justice, she spoke more for her young mistress than herself, and her face showed it. But the visitor, Susan, apostrophe said Florence. Susan, with an hysterical explosion, that was as much a laugh as a sob, and as much a sob as a laugh, answered, Mr. Toots. Apostrophe apostrophe, the smile that appeared on Florence's face passed from it in a moment, and her eyes filled with tears. But at any rate it was a smile, and that gave great satisfaction to Miss Nipper. My own feelings exactly, Miss Floyd, apostrophe said Susan, putting her apron to her eyes, and shaking her head. Immediately I see that innocent in the hall, Miss Floyd, I burst out laughing first, and then I choked. Apostrophe, Susan Nipper involuntarily proceeded to do the like again on the spot. In the meantime Mr. Toots, who had come upstairs after her, all unconscious of the effect he produced, announced himself with his knuckles on the door, and walked in very briskly. How do you do, Miss Dombey? Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Toots. I'm very well, I thank you. How are you? Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Toots, than whom there were few better fellows in the world, though there may have been one or two brighter spirits had laboriously invented this long burst of discourse with the view of relieving the feelings both of Florence and himself. But finding that he had run through his property, as it were, in an injudicious manner, by squandering the whole, before taking a chair, or before Florence had uttered a word, or before he had well got in at the door, he deemed it advisable to begin again. How do you do, Miss Dombey? Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Toots. I'm very well, I thank you. How are you? Apostrophe apostrophe, Florence gave him her hand, and said she was very well. I'm very well indeed, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, taking a chair. Very well indeed, I am. I don't remember, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, after reflecting a little, that I was ever better, thank you. Apostrophe, it's very kind of you to come, apostrophe said Florence, taking up her work, I am very glad to see you. Apostrophe, Mr. Toots responded with a chuckle. Thinking that might be too lively, he corrected it with a sigh. Thinking that might be too melancholy, he corrected it with a chuckle. Not thoroughly pleasing himself with either mode of reply, he breathed hard. You were very kind to my dear brother, apostrophe said Florence, obeying her own natural impulse to relieve him by saying so. He often talked to me about you. Apostrophe, oh it's of no consequence, apostrophe said Mr. Toots hastily. Warm, ain't it? Apostrophe apostrophe, it is beautiful weather, apostrophe replied Florence. It agrees with me. Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Toots. I don't think I ever was so well as I find myself at present, I'm obliged to you. After stating this curious and unexpected fact, Mr. Toots fell into a deep well of silence. You have left Dr. Blimmers, I think? Said Florence, trying to help him out. I should hope so, returned Mr. Toots, and tumbled in again. He remained at the bottom, apparently drowned, for at least 10 minutes. At the expiration of that period, he suddenly floated, and said, Well, good morning, Miss Dombey. Are you going? Asked Florence, rising. I don't know, though. No, not just at present, said Mr. Toots, sitting down again, most unexpectedly. The fact is I say, Miss Dombey, don't be afraid to speak to me, said Florence, with a quiet smile, I should be very glad, if you would talk about my brother, would you, though? Retorted Mr. Toots, with sympathy in every fiber of his otherwise expressionless face. Poor Dombey. I'm sure I never thought that Burgess and Company fashionable tailors, but very dear, that we used to talk about would make this suit of clothes for such a purpose. Mr. Toots was dressed in mourning. Poor Dombey. I say. Miss Dombey. Blubbered Toots. Yes, said Florence. There's a friend he took to very much at last. I thought you'd like to have him, perhaps, as a sort of keepsake. You remember his remembering Diogenes? Oh yes, cried Florence. Poor Dombey. So do I, said Mr. Toots. Mr. Toots, seeing Florence in tears, had great difficulty in getting beyond this point, and had nearly tumbled into the well again. But a chuckle saved him on the brink. I say, he proceeded, Miss Dombey, I could have had him stolen for 10 shillings, if they hadn't given him up. And I would. But they were glad to get rid of him, I think. If you'd like to have him, he's at the door. I brought him on purpose for you. He ain't a lady's dog, you know, said Mr. Toots, but you won't mind that, will you? In fact, Diogenes was at that moment, as they presently ascertained. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.